You ever been involved in a conversation which, as it unfolds, you begin to realize that it's on two completely different parallel lines? That you think you're talking about something, and the other person is thinking you're talking about something completely different. And the frustrations that arise in the midst of the conversation are really due to the fact that you're not on the same plane. You're not discussing the same thing. I'm a big fan of Far Side cartoons. I don't know if you remember those. That was back when cartoons were funny and not crass and passive-aggressive these days. And the cartoon has this split frame in it, in which they have a man lying flat on his bed and a woman lying flat on her bed, presumably, obviously, in different houses. And the man has the bubble above his head as he's laying down saying, you know, I wonder if she knows I exist. Should I call her? Maybe she doesn't even know I exist. Well, maybe she does. I'll call her. No, wait. I'm not sure if she knows I exist. And the bubble above the woman's head on her bed is, you know, I think I really like vanilla. She doesn't know he exists, obviously. It's going to be a poor conversation. What we have with Jesus in Pilate is, at the bottom of the frame, though, is a great caption. It says, same planet, different worlds. This is what's going on with Pilate and Jesus here in his private quarters. Same planet, different worlds. Two different conversations. And what's unique about this conversation is the dichotomy between this powerful Pilate and the seemingly helpless Jesus. You have a powerful Roman official who seemingly holds life and death in his hands. And this helpless, imprisoned Jewish commoner who, as the story unfolds, also seems to hold and does hold life and death in his hands. The encounter also begs the question as to who is really controlling this conversation. Who is leading it? Is it Pilate questioning Jesus, or is it Jesus actually questioning Pilate? Well, Jesus intends to guide this conversation on his own terms. And what you have here is a classic same planet, different worlds. Pilate's world is a world of power. And he's concerned with the question of power in his conversation. Jesus, he's concerned with truth and the way in which that truth impacts Pilate. So if we were to start the conversation and just look at it from Pilate's point of view, okay? We're not looking at Jesus' responses here yet, maybe only in a cursory level, but just Pilate's point of view. What is he thinking? What is he feeling in the midst of this conversation? Well, in the Gospel of John, Jesus has had the word king applied to him three times prior to this encounter. The first is from Nathanael. Nathanael is amazed by Jesus knowing about him before they even met. In Nathanael chapter 1 says, Rabbi, you're the Son of God, you're the King of Israel. In John 6, after the miraculous feeding of the 5,000, the people recognize how amazing Jesus is, and they have motives that are contrary to his own. And so after Jesus performs this amazing miracle, the text says, perceiving that they were about to come and they were going to take him and force him to be king, Jesus withdrew. They knew he was going to be king. They wanted to put him on the spot there, crown him, move him into the front spotlight. And incidentally, when we get to today's Palm Sunday celebration, when the people were lining the streets of Jerusalem, the text in John says, they took branches of palm trees, went out to meet him, crying out, Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel. Jesus, for 3 years now, has slowly gathered quite a large following. In some places, he had at least 6,000 men, not including women and children, listening to what he was saying and following him around. If you're a German procurator, you have been paying attention to very large crowds like this, particularly when there have been certain Messiah pretenders along the way who had started kind of revolutionary things, a lot of violence. And so Pilate's first question to Jesus, when he pulls him aside into his private quarters, was not really, why are these Jewish people who are your own people making these accusations against you? He wants to know, are you a king? Are you the king of the Jews? And it's a good one. It's an intuitive one. It's an important question to ask. For clearly, those closest to Jesus thought that he was. Those who witnessed the miracles thought he was the king. And the people of Roman-occupied Jerusalem said, he's the king. We have lost the shocking nature of these words with the familiarity of the story, but it's a provocative action to say he's king of the Jewish people. During that time, Tiberius was likely the Roman emperor. Herod Antipas was the regional Jewish leader of the time. Caiaphas was the temple authority over the Sanhedrin, 70 ruling rulers of the temple. And that all of them were wondering about what the Jewish people were hoping for, a real Jewish king which would overthrow Roman rule. They were all concerned by it. They all wanted to hold on to their own power. And thus, as Jesus enters the streets of Jerusalem to these large crowds, saying this is the king, Jesus moves quickly from being a marked man to just an imprisoned one. We need to get him now. The crowds are out of control now. We need to move now. Judas, do your work now. It's time to start. They were definitely concerned. And all these three rulers would host Jesus in their own presence in that single day. In the courtyard of the house of Caiaphas, in front of some of the members of the Sanhedrin. In the house of Herod Antipas, who asked Jesus to perform some miracles for him, sends him back to Pilate. And now in the praetorium in front of Pilate, Caesar Tiberius's chosen appointed ruler over this region in Judea. And he asks, are you the king? I want to know you're the king. Well, Jesus says, is this you talking or has people told you about me? And Pilate doesn't like this. He gets a bit cheeky, saying, listen, do I look like a Jew to you? He's mocking Jesus here. I'm the one talking to you. You're standing here in prison through the own actions of your own people. I want to know what you've really done. Tell me. Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. And all Pilate hears is the word kingdom, which leads to his third question. So you're a king. Are you a king, he says. What have you done? Finally, so you're a king. Pilate's getting to the point here. He hears the word kingdom. He locks onto this. He wants nothing else to be attended to. This man standing in front of him claims to have a kingdom that's a threat to Rome. You're a king. This is a power thing. You've come to take power. I hold the keys of power for Rome in this region. This is not going to go well for you. Now, Jesus, though, do you notice his responses are way different than Pilate's. Pilate's concerned about power. Is this someone he should fear? Is this someone he should control? Is this someone he should hold on to, or is it just a vain threat? He's genuinely conflicted about this. He doesn't seem to think that this passive man standing in front of him could actually be some kind of military might. But Jesus' responses in this entire thing, same planet, different worlds, are this. To Pilate, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus says, do you say this in a personal way, right? Do you say this, or do others say it about you, or say it to you about me? Like, do you really want to know the answer to this question, or are you just talking about popularity? And the second question that Pilate gives about power, I want to know what you've done. Jesus says, listen, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting, that I might not be delivered. He is asking talking about entirely different realities. You're talking about a kingdom with rulers. And so he's saying, just to be clear, Pilate, you're talking about a kingdom that has kings and armies and land and rules with an iron fist. I'm talking about something completely different here. My kingdom is not of this world. If this were, you remember the game Risk? You play that, you move the armies around the board and you roll the dice. If this were a game of Risk, just trying to conquer various territories, make sure we've exerted our power, I would have galvanized my people in an entirely different manner than this. I would not be standing right here in front of you today if this were the case. But the reason I'm standing in front of you today is my kingdom is not like yours. It's an entirely different reality, which is why it brings Jesus to his final response to Pilate's question. So now you're a king. Jesus says, you say that, but for this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. The question is not one of military allegiance or leveraging human strength and power to get what you want. It is between those who know the truth and those who do not. It is between those who hear the voice of truth and those who do not. Dale Bruner translates this passage in a unique way, saying, every single individual who is rooted in the truth listens to my voice. It's kind of a singular plural, if you would. Everyone who listens to the truth, who stands in the truth, who's rooted in the truth, listens to my voice. And as if to say, Pilate, are you listening here? This is the single most important of your life. If truth really mattered to you, you would actually be listening to what I'm saying. But Pilate's world is a world of power. And he dodges the question, famously, saying, I wish I could have heard the inflection of his voice. How does he say it? Is it really actually asking the question? Well, tell me, Jesus, what is truth? Or was it cynical? What is truth? Either way, it's a dodge. He doesn't like it. No criminal standing in front of him with their life hanging in the balance of his hands could say that they're the voice of truth, could they? Doesn't add up. And his response is a response that echoes through the halls of history. What is truth? Whose truth? Your truth or my truth? Or somewhere in between? Is there real truth, objective truth that we can actually know? Or is it just situational? Does it just have certain standards that apply to the age within which you live? Can truth be known? Or is it hidden? Can truth be grasped? Or is it simply determined by our own wills? As much as humanity has tried to explain it away, the search for truth is our deepest quest. And too often this quest is given up, either due to laziness, or I think the reality that a different answer is desired. This can't be the truth. How could this helpless man standing in front of me, who will soon go to his death, be the voice of truth? It was a scandal then. It's a scandal now. But Jesus is clear. Everyone who cares about truth hears my voice. They listen to my voice. They follow me. I came not to wield power, but to shine the light into darkness, to show truth. Therefore, what's implied here is that it's no good to be an admirer of Jesus. And it's no good to be maybe sympathetic to the injustice that's done to him. It's no good to think, what a great rhetorician. The words that he spoke were so moving. It's no good to be amazed by merely his compassion for others or marvel at his miracles. When I say no good, it doesn't mean there's not any truth in that. It's simply saying if that's the end of the story, it's a waste. Because Jesus is after one thing, the truth. People recognize in him the truth. And Pilate seems genuinely conflicted as to why Jesus is standing in front of him. But at the end of the day, truth doesn't matter to him. He's more concerned with power. He's more concerned with preserving the peace of the city. He's more concerned to make sure the crowds don't blow up on him than he is in administering justice faithfully or even listening to the voice of truth standing in front of him. And he will, in a few hours, famously wash his hands in front of the entire crowd, thinking that the truth of what he's done is blood on someone else's hands. He really didn't want to do it. He just felt compelled to hand him over. And there it is again. Really, what is truth? This man dies by the hands of injustice. Really? Is that all that bad? What is truth? And we live in a day and an age in which that question continues to be spoken. We talk about questions of real meaning. What can really be known? What must be followed? The cynical answer is, what is truth? What can we really know anyways? What does it matter? Just follow with your heart. Follow whatever's within you. My truth, your truth, it's all just the same thing. That is not what Jesus proclaims about himself. There are those who hear his voice and those who do not. There is those who follow after darkness and those who are drawn to the light. There are those who understand the difference between what justice is and what injustice is. It requires a definition. It requires a standard. And those who hear his voice know the depths of their sin, and yet, paradoxically, the glorious nature of a salvation that is offered in him. The reason he came into the world was to point people to the truth, which was his voice. He is the truth. In fact, he would say he's the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father but by him. Humanity will be concerned with the questions of power and control till human history ends. Jesus is concerned with the question of truth. Do you believe he is true? Do you believe he is the Son of God who came into the world to die for it? Do you believe that when you listen to his words, when you follow his leading, you are being led down the pathway of truth? Because when you are, even in the midst of that great laying down, for in our weakness, Paul would say, we are strong. It's a paradoxical thing that when you're in truth, that's where real power shows itself. We are called to go into a world that asks this question, really, what's truth? Do we believe the answer of what Jesus says about himself? That he is the voice of truth. Let's pray.